Welcome to The Dream Show. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson, and this is episode 249249. And our guest today, with a dream to explore and relate to her waking life and find deep insight, is Emily from Denver, Colorado. Now, we've just finished recording the session with Emily, and I'm here putting the beginning of the show on, so I can tell you that you're going to walk through an amazing dream with lots of very interesting symbols and a couple of TV characters that pop up in there as well. And so I know that you're going to enjoy this one. If you haven't listened to the dream show before, just to let you know that the formula is that we line up someone, well, people put their hands up and volunteer to be a guest on the dream show. And the thing that we don't know is we know nothing at all about the dream until we start to record. People tell me over and over again, and I listen, that you absolutely love knowing that as you listen to the podcast, you're hearing the dream for the first time as I'm hearing the dream for the first time. So you're getting my response to listening to the dream for the first time, and what questions do I ask, or what do I say, or where do we go from here? There's no pre-thought. Whereas, of course, if you book an appointment with me, I get you to send the dream beforehand, and I put a lot of work into it beforehand. But I know that is the live feel that a lot of you really enjoy in the dream show. So you'll hear all of that going on. Just quickly before we go there, a mention of the websites. My main website, janeteresa.com, that's Teresa without an H, is where you can go to listen to every episode of The Dream Show that's ever been. And of course, you can also listen to the most recent episodes of The Dream Show on all the usual podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, basically anywhere. JaneTeresa.com is also where you go to sign up to the newsletter, to read hundreds of blogs on dreams and dreaming, to find out how you can consult me, to find out about my books and where you can buy my books, and to find out about my courses. The course website is also a separate website, the Dream Academy, and that's at dream-academy-online.com. And that's where you can go to do three or four different courses that I've got there on dreams, beginning with how to interpret your dreams step by step and moving towards courses on how to become a professional dream therapist. So you can go there to find out about that. Otherwise, find me on Facebook or Instagram. But more importantly, let's get down to Emily's dream. Welcome to the Dream Show, Emily.
Thank you.
It's lovely to have you, and as far as I know, you are somewhere in Colorado.
I am, yes. Denver area.
In Denver. And so the season at this time of the year must be the beginning of fall for you, while we're sitting waiting for little green buds to pop out and warm our hearts.
Yes, it's getting a little bit cooler, and the days are getting a little bit shorter, and we're heading into fall.
That's absolutely beautiful. As you know, I have no idea what dream you've brought or prepared for today, so it's over to you, Emily.
Thank you. So I'm walking down a corridor, and it has very high ceilings, and there's a loggia, or maybe it's pronounced loggia, to my right, and then a wall to my left, and everything has a golden light to it, and it feels as though everything's made of stone, like travertine or tumbled marble. So I can tell that the natural light is coming in from the right side, and it has that kind of old, maybe European feel to it, this building. Hmm. And I'm with other people, and we're slowly walking as though maybe we're standing in a queue, kind of waiting to enter something, but very slowly and talking. And it feels as though we almost might be going into a banquet or something of that nature. And we're all in some type of ceremonial dress, light colors that may be togas, it may be long robes or gowns, but it feels ceremonial. Mm. And although he's not there right then, my date for this event has been an actor whose name is Jonah Hill, and he's typically my date for these events because I have sat his dog, but he can't make it this time, so his friend, who is a character from a TV show I used to watch, The Office, Dwight Schrute, is my date for this, but he's not in the hall. And we're in the corridor, and people are talking, and there's a marquee sign up high in front of me to the right, with parts of a word puzzle. So it's kind of like Hangman or Wheel of Fortune, where certain letters are revealed and others are hidden. Mm-hmm. And my mom is standing with me in line, and she says that she knows the answer to the puzzle because it lines up with the words that are hidden, or with the letters that are hidden. And she's telling whoever I'm standing there with that she knows the word, and as though she has some type of secret knowledge, and she's saying it's either Doberman or dog word. And I and the person I'm standing with thinks that she's oversimplifying, like whatever clue she was given, we're thinking that was more of an example word. And as she's saying this, I can sort of see the color sage green around her thoughts and her answers. And then up ahead, I can see a room, and this is the room we're filing into, and there are gold and silver chalices on the tables. And I'm carrying it like a handbag, but it's a gold or brass censer, like when you see on TV the priests, when it has incense in it, and they shake it, and the smoke comes out. But it's shaped like a little house, or like a church. But I'm carrying it as though it's an evening bag, and I've brought this from my room. But I feel like it is redundant. Like, I have that sense that this is redundant. Then the scene changes, and I'm standing at a table in a room that is to the right of this large hall. And the room is just large enough to accommodate this large round table and chairs. And so I'm standing at the table. This actor that is sort of the stand-in date for the evening, Dwight from Office, is seated to my immediate left. And then there's an elderly Englishman seated to the left of him. And then to the left of them are two of my neighbors, and they are standing. And the only thing that is to my right is a dessert trolley that's parked there. And so the neighbors that remain standing, they're assigned to the table, but they're not sitting. But Dwight and the Englishman are. And then Dwight explains that he's at the table because he's my date, and they say, "We know, Dwight." And it's as though they're sort of tolerating him, but they don't really want to sit down if he's sitting there. And so I'm bracing myself to sit, but I'm kind of shaking, and I knock over the dessert on the trolley. And then when I'm attempting to sit down, I knock over the wafer on this pink dessert that's in front of me. And the table is a white tablecloth, and the only thing on it is this dessert that I keep spilling. And then I move the dessert kind of out of the way, and the cream on the dessert starts to spill out onto the table. So the Englishman motions with his hand toward the napkins that are in front of him. And it feels like everyone is being really sort of patient and forgiving of my clumsiness. And then Dwight reaches over and eats some of the dessert, or mops it up, some of the cream with a cookie. And I'm kind of like cringing because I feel like that's a little crass behavior at the table. And no one says anything about that I'm spilling or knocking the dessert, but I feel embarrassed and frustrated. So I sit down, and Dwight asks me about my day, and I tell him. And then I think, oh, I guess I should ask him about his day. And he tells me that he's spent the whole day with his mom, which I think is really sweet, but it doesn't surprise me because I feel like Dwight's kind of a mom's boy. And, you know, of course he did that. And then when I think about how I spent my day, I feel like it wasn't significant or memorable. And then when I woke up, I sort of had this feeling that that I should spend time with my mom and, you know, offer her sort of emotional support and not really sort of try and change her mind about something. Just be there. Mm-hmm. And that's the dream.
I'm just writing down the last little bit of it and just be there. Wow, I love it. So much color and light and sense, very highly sensory, isn't it? Which I love. And did anybody ever get to eat the dessert apart from Dwight, maybe getting a little bit of off his napkin?
Well, that's the funny thing about the dessert is I am a complete dessert person. Like, I love dessert, but this particular dessert wasn't one that I would eat. It might be one that I would take a bite of to kind of be polite, but it was not at all appealing to me.
But not this one.
Yeah.
And that, just to be clear, Emily, when you, that thought that, oh, maybe I should spend some more time with my mom and just be with her and not try to change her mind, that wasn't part of the dream. That was a waking feeling that you had.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because is that what happens in waking life, that you do try to change her mind?
Well, she had been through a significant medical challenge earlier in the year, and so I was repeatedly going home to visit her, and it was sort of one of those things where I wanted to spend time with her, but I kind of wanted her to sort of, you know, open her mind up to kind of why she got there. And so I was sort of riding that fine line between being sort of useful and being there.
Yes, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, oh, where do we begin with this fantastic dream? There's also, you also beautifully observe all the rights and lefts, which is really helpful as well. And you've got a lot of emotions and feelings throughout it. And often, but not always, because they can never, you know, you can't take a dream dictionary approach. Every single symbol is personal. But often what's on the right in the dream can represent our left brain, our which is often associated with our yang, our logical approach to the world, and therefore can represent, the right can represent our outer world and what's happening in our outer world, whereas the left in our dream can sometimes represent the right brain, which is more holistic, emotional, creative, spiritual. So because the right brain, all the nerves from the right brain cross over to the left side of the body, what's on the left can represent our inner world, our spiritual world. And I think because, you know, you've got a lot of references here to light and ceremony and spiritual kind of feelings, I think there's a lot to explore here on what's going on in the left in your dream, which is your inner world and maybe your spiritual world, and comparing that to what's happening on the right-hand side. So that's one area, that's one avenue we'll take. But your dream opens up, and often the beginning of the dream sets the situation that the rest of the dream is going to explore. I should ask you, Emily, when did you have the dream?
This was October of this past year.
October 2020. Okay, yeah. So the dream will have been processing what was happening the day or two before that in general. So we're going back that far. So at the beginning of the dream, there's a sense of a corridor. Describe to me what the function of a corridor is in your own words.
So I kind of, it kind of reminded me of the Uffizi in Florence, where like the artwork is on the wall, but then that light just sort of comes in and gives it that grand feeling.
That's really lovely. So the whole essence of the beginning of the dream is that sense that I'm in a place where there is a special white, a special light, something that is enhancing something and giving it even more intense meaning than I might otherwise see.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I often think, I often see corridors in people's dreams, as in yours. You know, you're moving along the corridor, even though you're moving slowly, you are actually going somewhere. And so quite often, if a dream begins with a corridor or a hallway, there can be a sense that the dream is about to explore how you are getting from A to B in some area in your life. In other words, what kind of transformation you're going through, what kind of journey you're going through. Or you could almost liken it to a birth. You know, this is maybe a birth canal. We're going somewhere to birth something new here. There's that kind of sensation in that. And the fact that you've got the logia or the logia, whichever way we want to pronounce it, on your right-hand side, what would you say would be the function of a logia? Is it relaxation? Is it more than that? What would you...
I think I would say that it would provide shelter from the elements, but at the same time letting in fresh air, sort of making you feel as though you're outside and you're not, that kind of shelter from the elements, but then also feeling outside and in nature a bit.
So sort of bringing the outside in a little bit, being open.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you've got on the right hand side, you've got something which is quite open and letting the outer world in and giving you the feeling of being in the outer world, even though it's sheltered. And on the left hand side, there's a wall. So not open on that left hand side at this point in the dream. At this point in the dream, you're focusing on the what's something about your outer world, about being maybe slightly open, about being in contact with nature. And yet there's a spiritual kind of feeling here too, isn't there? And a sense of, even as you say, going back to the feeling of being in Florence, the feeling of a natural light from nature coming in and lighting up artworks and giving them more depth and meaning. So it's as if the rest of the dream is going to explore this, perhaps this theme of what am I opening up to in my outer world, and yet by the same time partially sheltering myself from it, that I am keen to help assist me in some kind of transformation or in seeing things more deeply, bringing more light in to some extent.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, and it may or may not, even though the left opens up in the dream, it may or may not, because at that time you had a bit of a wall to your inner world, you were focused more on the outer world, but as you say, also with precautions, wanting an element of shelter from what was going on. And I love the stone, the travertine, or the tumbled marble. So, you know, as if it is natural stone, but there's been a human hand in making this stone, hasn't there?
Oh, certainly.
It's been cut or it's been tumbled. And was the stone on the ground, or was it on the walls and the loggia as well?
It felt as though it was certainly on the ground, but then maybe like the pillars of the loggia were made out of it as well.
So there's a lovely feeling of what is sort of grounded in you and what is also being built within you, that is a mixture of the natural and your own hand in there, your participation in creating this building, this aspect of yourself. And that already, for me, jumps back to your connection with the corridor, to being in Florence as well. So you've got the works of art which are man-made, but perhaps spiritually or divinely inspired, but they're still man-made. So you've got this combination of the nature or spirit with the handmade, and the light shining through. So, you know, it could even be as grand at this stage as, what is it that I, Emily, would like to create, make in the world, whether it's a physical thing or whether it's a contribution, and how do I participate with nature or with the divine or with my spiritual world in order to bring light in for myself or for other people. There's that kind of grand opening, and you used the word grand for the start of the dream.
Yeah, I definitely feel that from the dream.
So it had a European feel. I guess we've got that covered with your reference to Florence, but did it feel European? Was there anything else in it that made you think this really feels European?
Nothing comes to mind other than that kind of than that stone and the old and grand feel to it.
Yeah, it's the old and grand, isn't it? The ancient built environment that you don't see where you live, and we don't see where we live, but you can see and feel all over Europe. So it's that connection with something ancient, or at least a centuries old, that you've got there. So again, that can add that level of, I, Emily, want to somehow reach back to a sense of something in the past and bring that forward into where I'm moving forward now. So it can be a sense of connecting with the ancient, for example. But you're walking slowly. How did you feel about walking slowly?
You know, it's funny. I'm such a fast walker. I never walk slowly. But it sort of felt like, because we were in this sort of ceremonial dress, and that we were kind of filing in somewhere, that it felt appropriate, and we were having a conversation as we were walking.
So on the one sense, there's a sense that, because you referenced the conversation, that when we slow down in life in general, not just in walking, maybe there's more room for a conversation with other people or with ourselves. There's more room to note the light on the walls. There's more room to note things. And yet you were making progress. And yet it also is connected with the sense of ceremony. This is a special occasion. This is not an occasion for running about fast. This is a time to take things slowly, which may also reflect what was happening in your life at the time. This is a time to be getting somewhere, but to be getting slowly with a sense of purpose, even if I don't know what the purpose is, the ceremonial dress. And I love that your ceremonial dress goes back in time too. You know, it could be togas, it could be long robes, grand. So, you know, with your togas, you're kind of going way back to, obviously, to Roman times, aren't you?
Yeah, it does feel pretty Roman, certainly.
So we go through all that amazing touching back for the past and this amazing spiritual feel. And then we bring in the fact that your real date, who actually isn't there, is Jonah Hill.
Yes.
Who's basically an amazing, in my eyes, he's an amazing comedian, and he's also a director. He's directed a lot of his own stuff, hasn't he? But how do you see Jonah Hill?
I see him as this guy who you might not, maybe you don't remember his name, you recognize his face, and you just maybe know that he's been in a bunch of really good movies. Mm. Might be a little bit unsung in that you might not necessarily know that he's directed it. You kind of see him as this sidekick kind of guy.
Yes. And in many ways, he is your sidekick in the dream, because he's just meant to be there for your date. It's not a real date. It's just because you sat his dog. It's a kind of sidekick. And then, in fact, it turns out not to be him. It turns out to be his sidekick as well, Dwight. So there is a kind of sidekick thing going on there. But as you say, someone who, in your eyes, has a feeling of being a sidekick without us necessarily knowing the depth of his talents and his gifts and his experiences and his contributions. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
So because it's courageous and wisest and most insightful to look at everybody and everything in a dream as an aspect of ourself, there's either in light or in shadow, the good, the bad, the ugly, there's a part of yourself according to your dream which has the essence of Jonah Hill. So perhaps in the way that you described it there's a part of myself, Emily, that is a little bit unsung, that people and I kind of recognize that I've done a bunch of good stuff, but I've actually done a lot more than that. Perhaps I, Emily, don't acknowledge exactly and deeply the amazing gifts that I've got and the experiences that I've had and the contributions that I've made. Maybe I sort of sidekick this aspect of myself a bit and say, I don't know, we'll come to what you actually say later. But let's at the moment say that there's this Jonah Hill aspect of yourself, which actually might be far more gifted and talented than you realize, that you've kind of sidekicked a bit.
Yeah, that could certainly be the case.
But, you know, it's sidekicked once again and turns out to be Dwight. I know The Office. I can't picture Dwight, but I couldn't catch his surname. What did you say his surname was?
It's a Schrute.
Schrute.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to work out whether that sounds like something, because sometimes a character will come into a dream because their name has a pun or a kind of symbolic intention. But mm-hmm. Dwight Schrute, and I'm going to ask you about Dwight, obviously, but the moment you said Dwight, my first thought was, that's interesting, there's been a lot of light in this dream, a lot of talking about light, and suddenly we've got a Dwight. So, but first of all, tell me about your feelings about The Office.
So I haven't watched it in a while, but you know, when I did watch it, a lot of it was really oddly reminiscent of my own office, and you know, my husband and I would even joke that like I was one of the characters, and there are definitely characters that I feel like I know.
You know, so it definitely represents The Office. And And Dwight, what kind of personality did he have in the show?
He sort of has this. Well, I might have been looking up an episode that I don't think I saw, but I was reading about it, where he invites himself to a dinner party, and I frequently have dreams where I show up places uninvited. Or I'm not. So that might be it. You know, he's kind of, he sticks to the rules so much that he's kind of tone deaf in the way that he interacts with real people, which I have been in the past tone deaf. And, you know, I've grown to recognize that, but I definitely have seen, you know, those aspects of myself.
Yeah, that's really interesting, isn't it? Because taking the second one first, the tone deaf and not always, in your past, not always been open to hearing people. If we go back in your dream, you know, you've got, first of all, you've got the Logia, which is open but yet also protected. And then you're talking about walking slowly down the corridor, and it's giving an opportunity for conversation, implying that if you were walking faster, it wouldn't. So you've got those kind of references to interacting with people or hearing what people are saying. But I'm also jumping up and down wildly. Well, actually, I'm not. I'm sitting comfortably in my chair. But in my head, I'm jumping up and down when you say, you know, that Dwight may represent showing up uninvited. Because that, to me, I don't know how you feel about it, but to me, it immediately links back to the feeling of Jonah Hill when you say, it's like, you know, you are, when you think of Jonah Hill, maybe not recognizing the full extent of his talents and what he's actually contributing. And so to have then this sense of showing up uninvited, it can come up when you think, consciously or unconsciously, I have these amazing talents that nobody knows about, and I would like to sort of step out in the world and uninvited and show people what I've got, but how's that going to go down? How's that going to go down? Because I'm not actually invited to step out and do this thing. So there's kind of like a similar energy hinted at there of, do I, don't I step out and really reveal the full Jonah Hill of myself? Or do I just sort of go along with people not really benefiting from everything that I have to offer?
Yeah, I certainly see those aspects.
Yeah. And so then also, because dreams are so amazingly resonant at so many different levels, there's also, as you say, the reference to The Office, that you relate to that and to your own office. So all of this may or may not relate at the level of the way that you do your business or work in the world, as well as the way that you emotionally, mentally, spiritually connect with the world. So we have a word puzzle, which is lovely. We have something to solve. How did you feel about the fact that the word puzzle was there, the hangman or the wheel of fortune?
Gosh, I'm trying to think if I, like it was just kind of there, but we were certainly paying attention to it and like, you know, all trying to sort of brainstorm maybe or or talk about solving it.
That's but great. Yeah, go on.
Like it was related to anything else, though. That's, you know.
Yeah. A Wheel of Fortune is also a TV show, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
And Hangman, I know the game Hangman when you use pen on paper, but is that also a TV show?
No, I just meant like the pen on paper version.
Yeah, okay. So both of those, and I wrote down when you were speaking the dream that you said it was revealing versus hidden. You used the words revealing and hidden. So that part of the dream is about then, if we relate it back to the self, what have I hidden? What do I want to reveal? There's parts of myself that are out there, and there's parts of myself that I'm trying to solve the mystery of and deciding whether to get them out there or not. But there's also, I wonder, whether there's also just the straightforward symbolism of the Wheel of Fortune and the Hangman. You know, the Hangman, can I get this thing out there? Can I solve it before the man gets hung, before it's the end? And the Wheel of Fortune, you know, the turning of life, the luck, the not luck, the way things, the cycle of karma, whatever. You know, there may be some things around that. But I love then that Mum knows the answer and it's some kind of secret knowledge, but you think she's oversimplifying it in giving her answer. A Doberman was her answer, did you say?
She thinks it's either Doberman or Dogwood.
Right, Doberman or Dogwood. And didn't you say that Jonah Hill was your partner, your date, because you'd sat his dog?
Yes.
Just backtrack to that bit again about why you'd sat his dog.
Yeah, that's true.
So somehow, looking after Jonah Hill's dog, he then became your date. Can you just run me past the logic of that?
I mean, I dog sit my my friend's dogs. Our dog passed a few years ago, and so we you know do quite a bit of dog sitting just because we miss dogs.
Yeah. But
I don't know. I don't know how I wind up getting a date out of it.
Okay. So that sitting the dog was a dream kind of reference then to maybe what I have lost and what I miss, and yet how I make up for that in life and how I use this, my love as a dog lover to extend that love to other people. So there's something along the lines there. So your mum knows the answer and it's something to do with dogs. So it's almost like the secret puzzle to my life may or may not have to do with either my grief, having lost my own dog, and going out and turning that grief around in a way to extend my love to other people's dogs. But we're not really talking about dogs, of course. Or it could be that, you know, looking after dogs is a great passion of yours, and so this is how the secret, the missing, the hidden details here are bringing out something that I am passionate about, or something that I care about, something that I'm really good at, and bringing it out into the world. That may be part of the secret knowledge. And you, aka Mum in the dream, is basically going through this, and you go, no, it's not as simple as that. It's not in looking to see what hidden things in my life I am willing to bring into the world, invited or uninvited. It's surely not as simple, you're saying in the dream, as bringing out my dog loving ability or my ability to turn around some grief into something beautiful that I can gift in the world. So you kind of turn that down a bit, but then
interesting.
Yeah.
That's pretty big.
Is it something you want to comment on at the moment or not?
Well, I love being around dogs, and it feels like it's like, well, the secret answer is dogs.
Yes. But you question that in the dream, then you're thinking, no, it's that's given like it's a clue, as an example. It's something deeper than that. You're looking for something deeper, and then you see the color sage green around her thoughts. So what does the color sage green mean to you?
I mean, in some sense, I think I woke up the next day and thought about it in terms of like sage advice. So it certainly represents a sage to me. But then when I cook with sage, but then I also understand its properties as far as it's being used to sage a room. And then, when I'm out hiking or walking, a lot of times the weeds and herbs smell like sage. So it's just all around pleasant smell, use, color, that everything about it just feels positive.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? I was interested because I asked you the question, I wrote, does it equal wisdom with a question mark, as in sage. So I'm glad that you mentioned that too. So, but you summarise all of that with it's positive. And I guess, you're talking about also saging a room, and the purpose of saging a room is to get rid of negative energies?
That's what I associate it with. Even if you walk in somewhere and you don't know what was in there, just starting off on a good foot.
Yes, yes. So putting all that together, it's like the wisdom of life is to maybe start off on a good foot, innocent until proven guilty. what may appear to be negative, maybe look at the positive of it. And so I guess at that stage in the dream, you were, I don't know if you were being negative, but you were saying that your mum's thoughts were oversimplified, and then you're, with the sage green, you're re-looking at it maybe and saying, well, are they oversimplified or are they wise? Are they actually, is it just being positive in this sense? And what's coming to me from this part in the dream, as your dream, what's coming to me is that spiritual wisdom, some of the wisest things that we can say about life can appear to be oversimplified. That the simple truths of life are often the deepest truths. That we can overcomplicate things or overthink them or expect them to be more complicated than they are, and yet a simple truth can actually be very difficult to execute as well. So there may be a sense here when you're looking at the puzzle of your life at the time of the dream and how to find what was hidden and how to bring it out into the world, invited or uninvited, and contribute in some way. There's a sense there of is what I'm thinking about or is the contribution I make really too simple? Should it be deeper? Or actually, is it very wise to step out with something which is actually extremely simple in a very deep way? And straight after you said, I see stage green around her thoughts, you said at the head of the room. And I thought to myself, oh, we've gone from her thoughts to mentioning the word head. So it is, it's something about thinking processes and beliefs here and thoughts as opposed to the heart. So at the head of the room, just trying to read my writing. Oh, yeah, it's the gold and silver chalices on the tables. And the gold and brass censer that you were carrying, which reminded you of a priest's swinging incense thing. Yeah. So was the religion that you were brought up with, was that Catholic, or did that involve any kind of incense swinging?
Not at all. I wasn't brought up in a religious tradition, and I actually had to look up what that was called. And the only way I would have seen something like this would have been on the internet or on television or something. It's nothing that I've ever seen in real life.
That's really interesting. So particularly because you've got the other TV the other TV references there. I also just wrote down as you were saying that sage and incense. So you talked about saging a room, and in essence, the walking along with the, I'm not Catholic either, so I'm quite ignorant on the details of this. Apologies to people listening in that know all about this. But to some extent, the priest walking with the swinging and spinning the incense into the church. And then you'd reference that you can use sage to do a similar thing to a room. So it may also be that your unconscious mind extended the symbol of the thought of the sage green into this bringing of an essence into the room that's associated with some kind of spiritual cleansing of some kind. Mm-hmm. But of course, it's shaped like a handbag. So it's got more of a material kind of element to it, or like an evening bag, and you feel it's redundant.
Yeah, it's like I'm holding it as though it's an evening bag, and I have this thought that's redundant, but it's shaped like a little house, or like a house.
Mm. I think you said when you were telling Mr. Dream, shaped like a house or a church. Was that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because that's what I wrote down. So it's almost like there's I'm carrying something in my life that feels like it's a built house or church, and it seems redundant to me. It's not something that I really need. And putting that together with what you've just said, you know, you weren't brought up with a specific religion, and yet you've got a religious connotation in the dream here, the priest-like figure, which was you. And so there's almost a sense of maybe there's a redundancy here in a building or a sense of religion or a sense of church or a sense of house. And if those are redundant, then maybe my life is more about nature and about being open rather than the church, the house, the rules, the religion, mm-hmm. Something along those lines. So preceding that, and what's firing my mind along these lines is a reference to the gold and silver chalices, because there are chalices is much more ancient in origin, isn't it? Or is that just my association? Talk to me about chalices.
That's my association with it, that it's that it's ancient, and there's just been story after story of chalices, and you know, they're either represented in artwork or quests, or just very, very important things, not something trivial.
Exactly. And those quests are often often spiritual quests, aren't they, to find just lost the word at the moment, begins with G, but anyway, it'll come back. So yes, they're often associated with I'm just trying to find that word and it won't come to me. People listening in are probably telling me, but obviously I can't hear you because we're pre-recording this. The Holy Grail, that's where I was coming from. The Holy Grail is one of the oldest stories about being in search of the chalice, and the name of the chalice is the Holy Grail, isn't it? And the whole purpose of that story is it's a search for your spiritual self, your spiritual meaning of life. And from what everything you say, that all the ancient stories are based on that. So for me, listening to that part of the dream, it's this feeling of there's this ancient spiritual quest, as you say, a kind of seeking of the Holy Grail. And in later years, this has been shaped, later historic years, this is shaped into religions, into houses and churches, and swinging incense censers. But in your dream, you're saying, but maybe that's redundant. So there's a feeling, again, of stretching further back into the past. I want to stretch back into the past to where life had a more natural spiritual origin, where life was about a spiritual quest or a journey in nature rather than around structures and rules and regulations of religion. And that kind of ties in with the beginning of the dream too, or the ceremonial but more ancient kind of feeling of stretching back in time.
Yeah, I definitely see that parallel.
Mm. But when you finally get, you don't actually grab one of the chalices, do you? You end up standing in the smaller room to the right of the hall, is that right?
Yes.
and there was a table, a round table with chairs. Was it round mm-hmm. or did I just draw a round circle here? It was a round table, was it?
It's round, yes, mm-hmm. with a white tablecloth.
With a white tablecloth, and the room was just large enough to accommodate it. So it was almost like this isn't a huge built church or a huge built room. This is a purpose-built room, and it may or may not go back to the round table. You know, you've got European references in mm-hmm. your dream, the round table of King Arthur. And there were definitely spiritual quests and chalices around that as well. So again, maybe a reference to quests. But here, you know, after all this elevation in the spiritual realm, we find Dwight is there. And an elderly English man to his left, which may or may not tie in with the idea of King Arthur. And to the left of that, two neighbours. Are they actual neighbours in your life or just people in the dream that you thought were neighbours?
Former neighbours. Yeah, that we previously lived in the same neighbourhood together.
Okay, so if you sort of lump those two neighbours together, what do they have a similar personality or what do they represent to you? Or is it just that they represent the former neighborhood that you lived in?
I think they represent to me people who aren't afraid to sort of speak their mind and maybe, you know, not do what's popular, you know, not join the yacht club, even if everyone else has joined the yacht club.
Yes. You
know, they're just not afraid to kind of go their own way, speak their mind and go against the grain.
Fantastic. I love that. You know, when you get two people in a dream lumped together, it's often that they share something in common or they both represent the same thing. So you've nailed that one, Emily. So they represent a part of yourself, because everyone in the dream is a part of yourself, a part of your dream self, which is not sitting down in the dream, it's standing by. And it is not afraid to go against the grain, not afraid to speak out, not afraid to say what they feel. Although in the dream, what they're really speaking out, I guess, is I'm not going to sit down next to Dwight. I'll sit down if Dwight's not there. That was the essence of it, wasn't it?
Yes.
So what did we decide Dwight meant? He represented... He can turn up uninvited in places. And he also follows the rules. And you've just talked about the two neighbours as being people that would definitely not follow the rules if it wasn't what was in their hearts.
True.
So, yeah. So there may be this part of the dream, maybe a bit of, you know, do I follow the rules or do I break the rules and say what I really feel? Do I wait to be invited? That's a rule. Or do I just step up uninvited anyway? And I get that. I think that might be the nub of a lot of this. Do I wait to be invited? Do I wait for the rules to allow me to step out and do what I want to do? Or do I just go and do it anyway? You're just tolerating Dwight. They're tolerating Dwight, but they don't want to sit by him. And you're bracing to sit. Nobody wants to sit next to Dwight. So at the time of the dream, there's a sense of you may have been feeling, oh, I'm going to have to go along with the rules here. I'm tolerating. I'm bracing to do it. It's not what I want to do. I'd rather speak out and do my thing or go against the rules, but I will do this thing. I will sit down. And then you get a bit wobbly and shaky and you knock. Now, I'm not sure from what I wrote down here. Did you knock the wafer off the pink dessert or did you knock a pink wafer off the dessert?
I knocked a wafer off the pink dessert that, you know, it's kind of, you know how they stick it up in the air where it's just kind of pointing there precariously?
Ah, yes, okay. And what does a pink dessert mean for you?
Well, the color of the pink was a really garish pink, so it was just like... you know, it just looked ersatz to me. Like I didn't want it. Like it didn't look like it was going to taste good.
Okay. So I'm bracing myself. I'm tolerating. I'm bracing the situation. I'm ready to sit down. It's something that feels quite fake, quite ersatz. It's also got a sort of precociously balanced thing on it. And I really don't want to do this. And oops, look, I've even knocked over the thing. And then the cream spills and everything's going wrong. And dessert is something that I usually like. Did you say I love dessert? You said, but not this one. So something that I would really usually love to do at the time of this dream, it's just not, I'm just so uncomfortable about it. It's totally precarious. It doesn't feel right. I'm having to brace to do it. I'm not stepping out and saying what I want to say.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And everyone is patient and forgiving of your clumsiness, and bearing in mind that everyone in a dream is an aspect of yourself, you are being quite rightly patient and forgiving with yourself for having these feelings. So there's a sense in the dream there of, in waking life, I would do this bracing, I would do this tolerating, but I can also be patient and forgiving with myself for coming at it from this point of view. And then Dwight mops it up and you're cringing because it's so crass.
Yes.
And you're embarrassed and frustrated. So there's a sense of, yeah, there's just something going on in your life that feels crass, or something you're considering which feels crass, embarrassed, frustrated. And then there's the asking of the day. And this brings us to the bottom line of the dream where he tells you that he spent the whole day with his mum, and you think, oh, well, despite all these feelings about him, I guess it's predictable. He's kind of like a mum's boy, but maybe I'm not spending enough time with my mum. Is that what the end of the dream was? How did I spend my day? I've written down not significant, memorable. Oh, that's you. Yeah, that's how you'd spent your day, was it, Emily? It wasn't significant. It wasn't memorable.
Exactly.
Yeah. So at that point in the dream, there's this almost like summarizing of the whole dream where you're saying to yourself, you know, I've got all these ways in which I would like to step out uninvited into the world and bring more of my Jonah Hill hidden qualities out into the world, and maybe in a very spiritual way, and maybe in a way that extends back deep into the past in some kind of way. But I'm not doing that. I'm bracing, I'm getting frustrated, I'm tolerating, I'm going with the rules. And when I think about all this, it's just, I'm not making a significant or memorable impact. And then on waking, you start to think about your mum.
Mm-hmm.
So how does all this fit, or where are your thoughts or feelings about this at the moment?
Well, the other thing too is that I can't quite place is the Englishman. So much of my family on both sides is British, so you know, if I see someone English, I identify, you know, I sort of think of them as like, and I've always been an Anglophile and watched a lot of English TV. So I feel like, you know, even though I might be a total stranger to them, like, I would have sort of an affection toward them. Mm. And then the night before, we had been watching a show with David Attenborough, which I feel like he sort of in the narration show, he sort of represents, you know, like Hollywood's idea of God, you know? So I'm trying to, you know, piece together him too.
There's a feeling there then, isn't there, because you've got the English people sitting at the table as well, that it's part of all this reaching back into the past, your past as well. How far back are you going? And I guess even with the reference to the Romans and the Logia or Logia, it's a Roman term as well, part of Roman architecture. And of course, England was invaded by the Romans, and much of England of that time is Roman in origin as well. So you are very much stretching back into the history that you know about, and searching for those roots, I guess, there in part of that dream. And when we search for our roots, and you mentioned the word, I think you mentioned the word identify with the British side of your family, even though they may not identify with you, or English people may not identify with you, you specifically said that there's that feeling there of part of you that feels you can identify with the past or with English, and part of you that would be think that what you would identify with would not identify back with you, that it wouldn't be a two-way street. And what that brings in my mind again is that feeling of invited, uninvited. Where do I belong? I know that I have this sense of connection, but am I going to allow myself to welcome myself to step into it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I love your thoughts there that, you know, and when did you say you were watching the David Attenborough? Was that recently or was that before the dream?
It was, you know, one night or two nights before the dream.
Yeah. So you've got that lovely, as you say, godlike symbolism of David Attenborough. And David Attenborough, of course, narrating the natural world, not the built world as well.
Yes, absolutely.
So some sense of, once again, you know, if you're processing any elements of that in the dream, it's the processing of the spiritual or the natural world and how you feel about that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Can you remember what was happening for you at the time, apart from being in the pandemic that we all were, in, or we still are, in October 2020?
Well, part of it was that, you know, I had sort of had a thought that maybe I needed to join some clubs or do something social. And then it sort of dawned on me, hello, we're in the middle of a pandemic. Maybe just think about when it's over some things you'd like to do and not put pressure on yourself to join things now, because that's not realistic. That's kind of a
yeah.
That's not something you're going to be able to satisfy.
that's the reference of the slowing down, the walking at the beginning of the dream and the talking and the connecting. But it's something that you're not going to be able to satisfy. You felt at the time of the dream. Yeah.
Exactly.
How did you remedy it in the end?
I just kind of did some research on things that I might want to do when the pandemic is over, and, you know, just started adding lists and thinking about something that, you know, I might enjoy in the future.
Mm. So did you get the sense at the time of the dream, that now that we've looking back on it, is there something in our exploration of the dream today that would have added light to you at the time?
Let's see. I think I was also reading quite a bit about astrology. I'm not sure if that factors in.
And did you reach out and spend more time with your mum after the dream?
I did. I mean, I regularly went home and spent time with her did exactly that. Like, took a step back and thought, okay, well, you know, nothing's going to change overnight. Maybe it'll take a while for her to come around and you know, see the causes of the health crisis.
Mm. And did she in the end?
I think she did, yeah.
Mm. So there was some element of the, even though that was a waking thought, not part of the dream, you kind of woke up with that feeling of slow down, go with this pandemic. There are things you can do, things you can't do. But one thing that I can do is sit with my mum and try to help her through.
Exactly, yes.
Mm. Mm. And the spiritual element, how do you see that looking back on it?
I think that another thing was that I don't remember if it was the same day or not, but I woke up with the sense that I had to, you know, take some of the things my mom said at more face value, and kind of read things into it, just kind of think of them more simply, more sage value, sage.
Yes.
more face value. And as far as the spiritual element, I really think that you were absolutely right on in that, you know, I have absolutely been looking for something that's a little bit more meaningful and impactful than, you know, the day-to-day work, the office, if you will.
Yes.
So that absolutely hits home.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And of course, you know, you don't have to give up the office while you find that thing or extend into that thing, but it's sort of looking for, and I guess the pandemic offered so many of us that opportunity to slow things down a bit and rethink how we might want to be more meaningful in the world, or how we want to appear in the world and what we want to contribute. And it certainly gave you that.
Yes.
And so it's, yeah. And I think taking Jonah Hill as a kind of role model is a bit of a start, you know, and thinking to yourself, even though the dream was almost a year ago now, thinking to yourself, what are the elements of my, what are my gifts that I, and my experiences that I downplay, that other people don't really know about me or don't notice about me or don't acknowledge about me? And what are the areas of my expertise and experience that I, Emily, don't readily acknowledge about me, that I can bring into the world, invited or uninvited? Because to me, there's that whole sense running through the dream, which is really important, of there's more to me than meets the eye, but I'm just not sure if I should stand up and allow the world and myself to benefit so much from it.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you have any last questions or thoughts?
No, this has just been amazing. You know, I've pored over this dream many times, and even thinking how you would think about it, and so much came out this evening that had never even crossed my mind before. So it was very cathartic, I must say.
Oh, that's really lovely to hear. Be excited if you let me know personally further down the track what else evolves from this. I'd love to know. Usually we give a dream alchemy. Of course, we're sort of running a bit out of time, but I still want to have a quick idea for you. And I think, what about you look around the house for something that looks like a chalice, or you create a chalice in art, whether it's three-dimensional or whether it's a painting or whether it's just a kind of quick pen and paper thing, but you create a chalice and you meditate on it every day for a very short amount of time, just maybe 2 minutes. You just meditate and fill your head with the thought of a chalice. Okay. And just see what happens, and do it every day for 2 or 3 weeks. Because, you know, you and I together nailed the chalice as a quest, a spiritual quest, something to attain. And so if we put that as that's what you're looking to attain now, the quest of how to be more significant, be more memorable, contribute in those kind of ways. And we've got the chalice as the ancient English, if we go back to King Arthur, the ancient English symbol of that, to simply meditate on it every day. And that meditation, whether or not you're used to meditation, it can simply be a contemplation. It's nothing to panic or worry about. It's just a closing of your eyes or looking at the chalice that you create and just seeing what comes up in your mind's eye. And writing it down.
Okay, that's perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for being a wonderful guest on the Dream Show, Emily.
Thank you.
That was a beautiful journey through a dream, wasn't it? When you're listening to this, which is released on the 4th of November, 2021, I'm actually sitting here today. It's the middle of August, so we're recording this in August. So these references to the pandemic and what may or may not be happening may not quite gel with where the world's at when you're listening to this, but I just thought that I'd mention that. If you'd like to be a guest on the Dream Show, go to janetheresa.com, go to the main menu, and under, I can't remember whether it's under podcasts or whether it's under the Dream Show, but there's a drop-down box and you can see be a guest on the Dream Show. So what you do is you fill in a little form and you volunteer to be a guest on the Dream Show. And of course, we do have, you know, quite a number of people put their hands up, so there are like waiting lists. But say something spectacular and jump out from the queue, and it might be you on a show coming to you soon. A reminder of the websites, janetheresa.com and dream-academy-online.com. And the next episode of The Dream Show, episode 250, that sounds like a milestone, doesn't it? 250 is coming out on the 2nd of December 2021, if you're listening to this in real time. Thank you for listening to yet another episode of The Dream Show. I hope you're passing these links to all your friends so that more and more people can learn more about how to approach their dreams, as well as gain inspiration and ideas from listening to our dreamers' lives and how they respond to their dreams. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson.